Peter B. Collins with news and comment. It's Wednesday, August 29th. I watched Ann Romney address the Republican convention last night. Here's her new name. Robin Trower sings it, Lady Love.
Lady Love, I heard a voice in the soothing me. Lady Love, a simple tune in and move me. Move me and soothe me.
Yes, Ann Romney, in between the giggles, was moving and soothing, particularly the women of the Republican Party. And her theme was love. And I found that fascinating, particularly after she was followed on the stage by Chris Christie, the big fat governor of New Jersey. We'll get to him in a moment. But Ann Romney dished up a little sermonette. And she is a good speaker. She has presence. She's more charismatic than her husband. And she has likely availed herself of the finest plastic surgeons in the country. There were moments, though, where she giggled in ways that really seemed off. And this message of love that she offered was defined in curiously Republican terms. It was a narcissistic kind of love, an entitlement kind of love, and not a whole lot of compassion. Oh, there were a few references to people in hard times America and the stories that have touched Ann Romney on the campaign trail. But she didn't offer up much love for, say, rape victims who might be forced under a Paul Ryan mandate to bear a child conceived in rape, because Paul Ryan says that the method of conception doesn't matter. If a woman is pregnant, it is God's design that she carry that fetus all the way to term. And Ann Romney and the others who spoke made presentations based on a couple of clear lies. The central theme of the Republican convention is a concoction, a fraud, based on a clearly out-of-context statement from Barack Obama. You've probably heard all about this, but Obama, it was only a month ago or so, and so I do give the Republicans some points for being nimble and having a quick response to carefully orchestrate their convention around what Bill O'Reilly says was a gaffe by President Obama. And you know what he said? In context, it was that when these self-made men strut before you and say they did it all themselves, that, you know, the government was there to give them incentives and tax breaks, maybe even government contracts, the interstate highway system and other infrastructure are the commons that were used by entrepreneurs and corporations to build their businesses. And he concluded by saying, you didn't build that. Well, the Republicans could only hear the last line. And that's all they focus on over and over and over again. And Alan Colmes was there on Fox. By the way, I have been watching the home team, so you don't have to. And boy, is it difficult. I am grateful to TiVo that I can fast forward through some of the dreck. But it is just amazing to hear Bill O'Reilly just slam down Alan Colmes time after time. And Colmes gets to plug his book, but it's like selling Bibles at an atheist convention. And he's always been a curious figure there at Fox, the whack-a-mole that they continue to whack. But, you know, Colmes did get in some points, just what I just told you, that this is a statement taken out of context and that the whole premise is faulty. And the other thing that was repeated by all the speakers that is such a lie and never called out or corrected by the corporate media is that they slam Obama for the results of the Bush-Cheney years and the economic meltdown that occurred in 2008. And then they blame him for, what, 42 months, they say, of record unemployment. Well, Obama made efforts to address unemployment, and time after time, had to cut ugly deals just to get extensions of unemployment insurance benefits that Republicans repeatedly refer to as handouts. And the stalling and obstructionism of the Republicans are a major cause of the economic stagnation and the slow recovery that we are all enduring. And so it's just bizarre. And when they talk about the American dream, they have a real sense of fantasy that is so hard to reconcile with what I consider to be a true reality. Now, we'll get to Chris Christie in a moment, but there are two things that the Republicans didn't want us to see. And as I mentioned, I had a video shoot yesterday, and I wasn't able to watch all of the proceedings. But I did catch up later on the manner in which they marginalized Ron Paul and his delegates. And because Ron Paul was not willing to sing the Romney tunes at the podium, he was not permitted to speak. And when they went through the roll call, they did it in a very different manner. They didn't go alphabetically. They picked the states that were solid for Romney to avoid showing any significant tally for Ron Paul. And then they disqualified delegates from Maine, despite the fact that Ron Paul kind of gamed the process and won those delegates using the rules. They've passed rules to prevent this from happening in the future. And they wouldn't even show us the courtesy or, you know, the veneer of democracy by allowing the process to go forward, tallying the votes for Ron Paul, and then declaring Mitt Romney the winner. That's how Republicans do it. And it's voodoo democracy built on their voodoo economic message and principles. And things are really only getting more extreme and more radical in Republican circles. And get this. Here's a clip from a video I pulled off of YouTube. I don't exactly know who this woman is, but she is a government official and a Republican from Puerto Rico. And she was introduced to speak to the convention. And apparently, because she's from Puerto Rico, that's about all these delegates knew, they started shouting, USA, USA, USA. And they shouted her down to the point that the chair of the Republican Party, Reince Priebus, had to wander out and gavel them down. And this play of USA as a way to silence someone who is a non-white individual who speaks Spanish just shows how hateful and intolerant the Republican Party is these days.
All right. Thank you, delegates. Thank you. Thank you. Now let's...
All right. That's enough of that. And then Chris Christie was the keynote speaker. And curiously enough, he didn't say that much about Mitt Romney. He talked about himself. He talked about his mom. And then he neutralized the love message that Ann Romney had presented by saying that his mother taught him, or maybe it was his dad, I don't know, it was one of these tired, shop-worn political stories. He said that he was told as a child that love is a good thing, but respect is more important. And so he essentially just said that you can listen to Ann Romney, ladies, but I'm the testosterone guy here, the 300-pounder, who's going to tell it like it is. And I guess they consider Chris Christie, who is a Coke-fed politician from New Jersey, a pro-corporate guy all the way down the line, takes his orders from David Koch, that somehow he is the future of the Republican Party. And one other sordid scene that I have read about in multiple places but not seen any recording of. There's a report that a CNN camerawoman, who is African American, was working on the floor of the convention. And one of the delegates threw nuts at her. Peanuts or mixed nuts, I don't know what kind of nuts they were. And then with a phrase, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it in front of me, but it was something to the effect of, this is how we feed animals where we come from. Stunning, shocking, and very, very ugly. One of the other speakers who I tolerated for a few minutes before hitting the fast forward button was a new Tea Party senator from New Hampshire, Kelly Ayotte. And she's an attractive woman. Pretty good delivering a stump speech, not quite the zingers that Sarah Palin would serve up. And she began her speech by saying that 9/11 changed everything, and her husband, who had been planning to become a commercial airline pilot, instead flew missions in Iraq. And just once again, the phony linkage between 9/11 and Iraq is surfaced. No mention of the phony WMDs, no mention of the carnage caused or the lengthy occupation after we were planning to waltz in and out in 75 days under the Rumsfeld plan. And so we live in parallel universes. And watching these Republicans as they pander to their base is so, it's depressing. And I have to say that my emails from listeners in feedback to this program recently have been fairly depressed. And if that's the way you feel about politics, I understand. These are definitely dark days. Now, members of both parties parrot the phrase of supporting the troops, and they always praise the men and women of the U.S. military who put their lives on the line. But somewhat parallel to the way that Republicans are obsessed with birth, but not with those who are born, well, we have an obsession in this country of a kind of patriotism where we parrot these phrases about supporting the troops, and then we don't. And returning veterans are facing an incredible backlog just to get a plan for their medical benefits approved. In Waco, Texas, where there are 51,000 veterans waiting for, not actually to get services, but just to get approval for a benefit plan, the average wait now is 393 days. And the shortest wait is in Baltimore, where it is a mere 328 days. So you have to wait an incredible period of time, some cases more than a year, just to find out if your benefits will be covered. Nationwide, the VA took an average of more than 8 months to process a claim in June, about 50% longer than a year ago. Veterans in New York, North Texas waited the longest at more than a year on average. Those who appeal a denied claim wait an average of 3.5 years to a claim, to approve a claim, or even to get a response on a claim. Yeah, support the troops. Over in Afghanistan, our puppet Karzai is shuffling his cabinet, and just kind of the way Obama did it, where he moved Panetta to the Pentagon and then put Petraeus in at the CIA. Well, he has moved the, he's a politically influential Tajik commander, Bismillah Khan Mohammadi, is taking over the Defense Department after he was recently sacked over at the Interior Ministry by the Parliament. And it's said that Karzai is trying to consolidate power with the expected departure of the occupying forces, sometime in the next 12 years. And over the weekend, last weekend, we heard the report of the beheadings by alleged Taliban forces of 15 men and 2 women. And this occurred in a desert territory in northeast Helmand province. I don't know all of the details of this case, but it certainly shows that we're not going to prevail. And that the guerrilla forces that we refer to, the insurgents that are lumped together as the Taliban, are arrayed in ways that will permit them to survive any kind of U.S. confrontation because they know we're going to go. They've always known we were going to go from day one. We've been there longer than most of them probably expected. And this beheading incident is against the backdrop of another story that was in Sunday's New York Times. And it says, in small mountain villages on Taliban turf in eastern Afghanistan, Pashtun tribesmen took up arms to fight the insurgents this summer. And this appears to be a freestanding citizen uprising where they say, we don't want the Taliban because they close our schools, they confine our women, and this is not the society that we want. Maybe it's freestanding, but that's kind of hard to believe, the way the U.S. works. In Israel, a setback for the parents of Rachel Corrie. She was the courageous young woman at age 23. She was wearing an orange vest and carrying a bullhorn. When she stood between an armored bulldozer and the home of a Palestinian family way back in 2003. She was crushed by that bulldozer. And the verdict in the courtroom in Haifa is that it was just an accident. And now we know it was Rachel Corrie's fault. And I wasn't there. I have seen a video of the scene. And a case could be made that the soldier who was operating the bulldozer, who was in a cage, could not see her in front of his big blade. But it was a confrontation that could have been abated. And she stood firm for human rights, and I think for many of us. And while I'm not surprised at this ruling, it certainly is disappointing, and it's one of the reasons that many activists in this country who support the aspirations of the Palestinians have a boycott against Caterpillar, the American-based multinational that makes these huge vehicles, now with 16 plants in China, I recently learned. And they are killing machines, not just earth movers. Rachel's mother, Cindy Corrie, said, "We are upset and saddened by the verdict. This is a sad day not only for our family, but also for human rights, for the legal system, and for the state of Israel. It is clear that the legal system protects soldiers and provides them with legal impunity at the cost of civilians. At least we have the option to turn to the justice system, a right many Palestinians are denied." The Bradley Manning case, a new turn. Lawyers for Manning charge that the government is withholding hundreds of emails related to his pretrial detention, at Quantico, Virginia, where he was single-celled, solitary confinement, often left without clothing. And these conditions led to a lot of protest. And there was quite a bit of email traffic related, some 1,400, to the management of Bradley Manning's detention. And Manning's lawyers have learned that a 3-star general in charge of Quantico was briefed on every minute detail. And they are attempting to access those emails to see what else they might find. In a little town in Georgia, Ludowicki, never been there, and if I mispronounced it, sorry, a bizarre plot has been exposed in the murder trial of a soldier and his girlfriend who allegedly were killed to protect an anarchist militia group that had formed and stockpiled assault weapons and plotted a range of anti-government attacks, including an attempted assassination of President Obama. And these guys were pretty serious. They spent at least $87,000 buying guns and bomb components. It was funded by the payment from an insurance policy from the group's leader. The insurance payout of $500,000 was for the death of his pregnant wife a year before. And while the death is described as highly suspicious, the leader, named Agwagui, has not been charged in his wife's death. And this just brings to mind the misguided efforts of law enforcement in this country, including the FBI. They are too busy infiltrating Muslims, peace activists, and other nonviolent individuals to have been able to penetrate this military group at Fort Stewart, which had active intentions. And unlike most of the other so-called domestic terrorists that have been infiltrated and prosecuted by the FBI, these guys bought their own weapons. They were not supplied by an FBI handler. We wrap today with three stories from here in California. Finally, there is a proposal for pension reform for public employees that has surfaced in the California legislature. And they've been retooling it for months, but they finally have rolled it out. And I think it'll be very quickly adopted. It embodies many of the proposals that were offered in a 12-point plan by Governor Jerry Brown last fall. And it does have some tweaks that I think make it a little more fair. Now, I do acknowledge that there is a problem with unfunded pension liabilities going into the future, and that this increase in cost has become a burden on local and state governments. But it's extremely overblown. And one of the elements of this package that I think is most important, before we get to the cutbacks and the money that has to be coughed up by the employees, this bill bars employers from suspending their contributions. And this is one of the fundamental reasons that the pension funds have been underfunded the last 10 years. Because starting in the late 90s, roughly 1998, the investment returns were so robust that many government entities stopped making contributions to pensions. Things were going okay, and there weren't any actuarial anomalies because of the strong performance of the market. And when that hit the wall in 07-08, they all of a sudden not only had to restart making contributions, but they had to make bigger ones, and they've been increasing year after year. So that's an important aspect of this this problem that often goes unreported. So the bill that is going to work through the legislature this week mandates 50% employee contributions for new employees. It also increases the retirement ages, reduces the potential for double dipping. For current employees, there is no cap or change in pension payouts. There's no change in the retirement age, but there is an increase in the employee contribution to 50%. And, you know, I'm of two minds, because when I hear about people who have a pension payout of over $200,000 a year, I just think that's grossly unfair. Unfair to the system and unfair to the employees whose pensions average $30,000 or $40,000 a year and who earn those over a 30 or 40 year career of contributions. For their benefits to be diminished so that we can pay out six-figure pensions, mostly to elected officials and to high-ranking government employees. Well, I find that grossly unfair. At the same time, a contract is a contract. And if you worked for even 20 years under a plan that said you could retire at 50 or 55 and you'd be guaranteed a certain pension, that is a contract. And so I do think that based on what I've seen so far, this package of pension reforms in California is a pretty prudent and practical approach to a complex and growing problem. At the University of California, we reported a few weeks ago on a study about alleged anti-Semitism on campus. This relates to pro-Palestinian activists who have a day every year where they set up a checkpoint, like the ones that Israel imposes in the West Bank. And they dramatize for individuals, including some Jewish students, what it's like to be subjected to that kind of an occupation-style governance structure. And Mark Udoff, who is the president of the UC system, fancies himself as a First Amendment scholar. I shouldn't say fancy. He can credibly make that claim. And to his credit, he has rejected the recommendation that they ban certain expressions that might be construed as anti-Semitic He said that he will respect the Constitution and will not endorse a proposal that would violate First Amendment rights. Good for you, Mark Udoff. At Yosemite National Park in Central California, two people have already died after being exposed to the hantavirus. And how do they catch it? Well, the deer population at Yosemite carries the hantavirus, and mouse populations, or mice, as I can properly say in plural, the mice have been carrying the hantavirus into tents and cabins and infecting human beings. And here's a description for you. Hantavirus is spread primarily via deer mice, which generally live at higher elevations, and they're most common in the eastern Sierra Nevada. Lab tests taken after the first two victims fell ill confirmed that the hantavirus was present in fecal matter from mice trapped near Curry Village. So, enjoy Yosemite. Just watch out for those deer mice. And if you'll indulge me for a moment, I want to see if any listeners have tips for me, because I don't have a rat in my kitchen, but there are two gray field mice who have been entertaining us. They come in the evening, and they run through the ceiling. They're up there inside the drywall, and I don't know how they get there, but they've got their own little path around the house. And I'll be sitting there reading the paper or a book, and I hear this pitter-patter of very fast feet moving through. And so I've been using traditional spring-type mouse traps with various types of bait. And let's see, in the last week, four nights, they ignored my traps altogether. And on three nights, they sprung the trap, got the bait, but didn't get caught. And so if you have a solution for me, particularly one that is more humane than decon or some of these other poisons, I'd like to hear your thoughts. Drop me an email to fullofit@peterbcollins.com. That's fullofit@peterbcollins.com. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment. This podcast is free, so pass it along to your friends with my best wishes.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.